So 0289 033 105. If you saw the video, you probably felt nauseous. If you've just looked at the pictures, you probably feel quite sick as well. I should emphasise that people have been charged in relation to this. There's only a limited amount that we can say regarding what happened in Bangor as the weekend began to unfold. But vicious is a very appropriate word. I want to speak to Alan Chambers from the UUP. He's one of the public representatives in the area. Good morning, Alan. This reflects very poorly on what is a fine town.
Good morning, Frank. Indeed it does, but at the outset, it is an isolated incident. It's certainly, I have never witnessed or heard of such a shocking thing as this that has happened in Bangor. So I would reassure people that it is an isolated incident.
Is there no one in Bangor who could have stepped in? No one who could have intervened? It was a sort of a day where you'd expect a lot of people to be around. Do people give the like of that a wide berth?
Well, Frank, I stumbled on the video yesterday afternoon and started watching it, and I gave up at a point. It made very uncomfortable viewing. It was disgusting. It was barbaric. But what I did notice was the absence of anybody on that particular pier. And the amazing thing is that that is a busy thoroughfare. It's a place that people walk their children. It's a place people walk their dogs. But there just seemed to be an absence of anybody on the pier. It was about 7:30 on Friday night. I think if there had been people on the pier, I'm sure some good citizens would have stepped forward and stopped this.
So I'm just wondering, would people to some extent have been giving it a wide berth? Would it be a reflection on where we are with today's society? Maybe if it had happened down my street or down someone else's street, we may have crossed the road to get away from it. I'd like to think I wouldn't, but many people probably feel they would. And as a result of that, you will have a situation whereby, you know, you could feel guilty for not intervening. And with regards to the people who are crossing the street and not intervening, or the people who are at a distance turning a blind eye to it, to the likes of this, to the likes of what's happening on our streets with our young people, or indeed with older people, would we be well advised to stay well away from incidents like that, or should we be making more of an effort to protect someone who's being attacked generally?
Well, I think it would be a very poor reflection on society in general if we said that that was going to be endemic, that people would turn a blind eye and walk away from these things. God help us if society ever descends into that. We have to depend on each other to keep each other safe. To put this into perspective, Frank, this was on a pier at a harbour. It's a lengthy pier. If you were on that pier, you couldn't escape from it. If you're a member of the public, you know it's a narrow pier as well, so you just couldn't sort of go to the end of the pier and turn your back on it and pretend it wasn't happening. From what I could see on the video, there just was nobody on the pier at that particular time, and that was an unfortunate coincidence, maybe. But I would like to feel if there had been people on that pier, be they visitors or be they people, Bangor residents, that they would have intervened. Certainly, in my own circumstances, I most certainly would have intervened.
Generally, and again, I emphasise I'm talking generally, are there feral young people on the peninsula, in the Ards area, in the Bangor area, coming maybe from Belfast? I don't know. Generally, if I took my family to the seaside, would I be encountering feral young people who are hell-bent on ruining the enjoyment for everyone? Is that a common thing today in North Down?
Absolutely not, Frank. It's certainly not in the North Down that I know. And I walk and drive the streets of North Down every day. And it's certainly not an epidemic that I'm seeing. Yes, there are young people who can be fueled by drugs, can be fueled by alcohol, and can act foolishly. I think that happens everywhere. And I think the police try their best to take a robust response to that. But I think there are groups of young people, and there always have been groups of young people that will cause get up the mischief. But I think in this current society, with drugs and the availability of alcohol, I think it charges some young people up more, and they just do these foolish, mindless things.
One final question to you, Alan. Were young people doing crazy, vicious things like this the whole way through our lives? And now that it's caught on film, it looks much worse.
I don't think so. I don't think that the I think that the very fact that this was put on video shows you a mindset, Frank. Because immediately the people who are perpetrating it, you would realise that this is, I'm going to be providing evidence here, and then to publish it on social media. It's just absolutely crazy. But it's designed, I think it's designed to humiliate, and I think they wanted to humiliate the young victim by putting it out in social media. But obviously, going on social media has led to their downfall, and the full rigour of the law has to come into play now. But, I mean, this young girl, her wounds, her physical wounds will heal. The psychological scars that young lady will carry for the rest of her life, they will remain with her for the rest of her life.
Alan Chambers, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning from the UUP, one of the public representatives in Bangor. Victoria is listening to all of this, and she's a point to make about my suggestion. Was there no one to step in, or do people not step in this day and age generally? Do people intervene? Victoria, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Victoria. Make your point. Go ahead.
No, Frank, I would most definitely not step in. I'm a young mother of three children, and if I was walking in Bangor and seen something like that happening anywhere, it doesn't even matter in Bangor at all, but if I seen anything like that, I would most certainly definitely turn on my heels and walk the other way in fear that if I said anything or hinted to try and break it up or whatever, that they would turn on me or my family.
It is understandable. I would like to think I would intervene. I'd like to think other people would have intervened on Friday and they didn't. In the wider picture, will people or will they not? You suggest you'd be safer not to. Victoria, one other question, simply because you're the first woman that I'm speaking to this morning, and I don't want to focus too much on that particular incident in Bangor, but it primarily involved women being vicious to a woman. Do women have that mindset generally where they can beat someone up? These are pictures that you would normally associate with men on men.
Well, I think nowadays, Frank, the discipline that a mother or a father can give a child has completely changed to the point where there is no boundaries, there's no limits, a child can get away with anything nowadays, and the mother cannot reprimand that child on their own without fear of, having to get in contact or get social services in contact with them. I think of those children that were fighting yesterday, male or female, had more boundaries and stricter discipline, that possibly mightn't have happened. With women in general, I think nowadays it's the same, man and woman. They have to put a front on that you can't mess with me because look what I can do.
But did women always fight? Or is it simply because of social media we now see them fight? Well, there are many videos up now of women fighting, women being vicious, women being violent. When I was growing up, I was never aware of women being involved in street skirmishes.
No, it's more of a disgrace for a woman to fight than a man. It's more accepted for men to fight. But with such a big platform with Facebook, I think it's more acceptable to post stuff like this on Facebook so that everybody will say, oh, don't go mess with such and such. I seen her, she was fighting and she's a good fighter, or she mauled that wee girl, or, don't touch her, or give them like a backbone.
That's a very sad commentary on life, but it's probably true. Victoria, thank you. I want to speak to a former police officer who's now general commentator and writer about where we are in society today, right after this. Right, good morning to you. 90-333-105-077-66-105-105. Some of you saying a member of the public did step in eventually. The only reason that the young victim walked away. And you're saying that you make some points about what is actually on the video. I don't want to go into that in too much detail, but I think you will see on the video that the person who has been kicked actually gets up and walks away without any assistance or any help whatsoever until someone intervenes. After that. Let me speak to Terry, who did intervene on one occasion. Terry, when people are fighting, you feel the need to help someone who's getting a Lutheran, so to speak, but have you any regrets about stepping in?
Good morning, Frank. No regrets whatsoever. I did have, when I actually witnessed this going on, I actually drove past it, and my conscience drawed me back to the scene where this was going on. And by that stage, you know, I mean, when I passed it, there was four young fellas. One of them was dancing about 15 times on this young fella's head. But when I got back, when I turned and came back down the road, he had broke free, and he was like staggering across the road. So I got him into the car, and I brought him to the local police station where he was interviewed and what have you. And later on that day, he went to hospital. But he had phoned me later on. I had phoned the police later on to see was the young fellow okay, because he was badly bruised and beaten. But no regrets whatsoever, Frank.
Yeah, you feel a sense of satisfaction that you did help.
Yeah, Frank, it was nerve-wracking at the time, because I feared for my own safety, because I said to myself, if I go back here and get involved, I could end up getting hurt, maybe getting stabbed, battle in the face, things like that. That was all going through my head. But at the end of the day, I was glad, and later on, you know, I had a great sense of pride that I was able to go back and help the young lad.
And this was, I don't want to go into the case, because this was relatively recently, Terry.
But then it's past a couple of weeks, right?
Okay, well, fair play to you indeed for assisting. I want to speak to Colin Breen, who's a former police officer, writer and commentator now. Colin, is society getting more vicious now, or does it just look worse because it's posted on social media?
Well, I think the incident we're speaking about obviously looks worse, because it's one thing to hear on the news or read about in the newspaper, but when you can actually see footage of the incident occurring, makes it all the more real and all the most horrific. And people generally wouldn't have witnessed in the course of their daily life such a vicious and prolonged assault taking place. And I think that's really, it brings home a realism to the story behind the headline, as it were.
It is really concerning that we're... But then I'm asking this question, and getting on, I'm getting flashbacks to when I was growing up, and I saw people be beaten up at nightclubs, and I saw people be beaten up in the street, but it always involved males. It never, ever involved women. I'm just wondering, is this a relatively new thing, women on women, fully vicious beating of women on women, or did you come across that quite regularly down the years in the force?
Well, it would have happened occasionally, but I would certainly agree with you, it wasn't as common as men fighting. But even back then, there was, you know, if men were involved in a fight in the pub, it tended to be a couple of punches. Sometimes it was obviously more vicious, but by and large, it was a quick skirmish. And gone, apart from in some exceptional cases. It's the length of time this takes place and this sort of almost a lad's attitude amongst the girls, and especially if drink's been taken, that they get involved. And we see videos cropping up. I watched one recently outside a nightclub with some girls, you know, taking on doormen. And whenever that fear's gone, and there seems to be this attitude that people can act with impunity and nothing's going to happen, and whether they've lost all fear of or respect for the courts, or if they go to court, or sure, nothing happens, we only get this or we get that, or they tend to think, I got off with a fine, or I got off, you know, with a suspended sentence. And I think that once that goes, and indeed parental concern as well, which, you know, as Victoria said there, I mean, that's the sort of thing that should be inbred in kids from an early stage, you know, respect for others, never mind to have that gang culture. And the incident you're talking about particularly, I mean, the young girl was fairly defenseless. She wasn't fighting back or anything like that. So there was a sort of a power and a bullying effort and domination of the person while the injuries were being inflicted.
Colin, are you old enough to remember tarring and feathering? Grace has brought this up, and I do remember women being tarred and feathered in Northern Ireland, and very often it was done to them if they were having a relationship with a soldier. It was just a vicious attack on women in the past. There may have been other reasons why women were targeted, and I'm quite sure there was many a person who was tarred and feathered and they were pulled out of a crowd and they were the wrong person, not even the person that the thugs had been planning to attack. So I'm not for a minute suggesting that everyone who was tarred and feathered had a relationship with a soldier, but that's one of the reasons why they were targeted. And Grace is saying very often this was women on women in the past, in the early stages of the 1970s. Are you old enough to remember that?
Well, alas, I am, Frank. And I can remember it being on the front page, generally, of newspapers, the photographs that have been tied to a lamppost. Quite often it wasn't tar, because it was difficult for them to do, but it might have been black paint. But either way, the message was coming across very straightforwardly, and they would have had their hair cut, which obviously for a female would be seen as a way of demeaning her further. Sometimes it would have happened with males for anti-social behaviour, so-called, by the paramilitaries involved. But it certainly did occur, and whether women were doing it against the women rather than having men do it because it would have read more harshly in the newspapers, I don't know, but it was certainly a relatively common occurrence. And then you could also argue that the men may well have been shot or kneecapped rather than have the tarring and feathering, which they didn't seem to ever do with females.
Yeah, there's something about the imagery at the moment, because it is so highly profiled on social media, that is incredibly sickening. And, you know, this video that everyone is talking about is in the newspapers today and whatever, and you see the beating up of the young woman. A number of people are making a point, if you watch even longer, the violence starts again, and she did actually have her head pushed into a water fountain, and then a member of the public did intervene at that point. That point's been made by Christine in Banbridge. It's also been made by Pete, who's listening to the programme. Thank you for that. I have to say, you know, I couldn't possibly watch all of what was on social media in relation to Bangor at the weekend. But we did say that the public didn't intervene. Eventually, someone from the public did intervene, and fair play to that person. There's an onus on the public to intervene, isn't there? Isn't there, Colin? There's an onus on us as citizens to ensure that people don't have hurt visited upon them in a public place.
Well, it goes back to the old-fashioned, I suppose, now in some ways, where the people were brought up and grew up, and they would be doing their civic duty, and that you wouldn't want, I mean, if you had your daughter in the circumstances, I have two daughters in their 20s now, but I mean, if they were somehow caught up in something like that, you'd like to think that someone would intervene. And if they were too scared to actually physically intervene themselves, I mean, we all have phones nowadays. You'd think someone might have phoned the police. And even Alan's point about how it happened on the pier, there weren't that many people about. I would imagine for the length of time that went on, anybody who was near there actually left fairly smartly. And where that fountain is quite some distance from the pier, which makes it an even more sustained sort of pursuit come attack. And when the young lady did get up, I would imagine, having seen her face now, that she was probably working on automatic pilot, as it were, whenever she got away from the people who were attacking her. When I say away, she was able to move and walk, as was mentioned. But, I mean, they can't x-ray her yet because the swelling's too bad to see what damage has been done to her face. And if your head's been banged on concrete, I mean, you're not that far big a step away from actually killing someone.
They are harrowing pictures. Colin, thank you very much indeed. Someone saying the pier for a long time has been a no-go zone with crowds of abusive teenagers gathering. Not talking about young people in high spirits. I'm talking about a totally different crowd. They have no fear of the consequences. This is why people do not want to be on the pier, says this texter. Let me speak to whoever's on line three. Got a point to make to us. I think it's Ronnie. Yes, go ahead, Ronnie.
Frank, I was a doorman of nightclubs in Belfast for 30-odd years. I never seen an attack like that in my life.
Yeah, when you were the nightclub doorman, you would have seen examples of people fighting. Did you see women fight?
I've seen women fight the odd time, but not as bad as what I seen yesterday in that video.
And whenever women did fight, did people intervene? Did they try to stop them outside clubs? Did they?
No, it was really people that were with them in the clubs would have tried to stop it, but at the end of the day, we had to job and put them out.
And
you know, it never was like that.
Yeah, you're talking about the viciousness of it.
Yes, the viciousness of that. You could actually see on their faces the viciousness that they were doing. They were, you know, it was totally unbelievable. Frank, it was sickening.
Yeah, sickening is a word. I don't want to go into too much detail in relation to the actual video because we are restricted by the fact that people have been charged. I want to speak to Wayne Denner from waynedenner.com. Wayne, good morning. I'm just wondering, Wayne, is social media to be blamed partly for this because people want to show off on social media, or is social media actually shining a spotlight on the evil that has always existed in society, but it's now been highlighted with a wide range of videos that have been posted over the last couple of years?
Good morning, Frank. I think there's a couple of things to think about in relation to this piece of content and also other pieces of content of a similar nature online that people are being exposed to on a daily basis and people may have not come across before. And the problem with this type of content is once you see it, it's very, very difficult to unsee content that you experience online. I think Colin makes a very, very good point about the realism. This also shows the other side of social media, maybe the darker side of social media, and also people uploading content to the internet and social media with out impunity, thinking that, you know, it's acceptable to upload that type of content and it shouldn't be more appropriate to promote that or report that content to the PSNI. And really what you post on social media has consequences in the real world. So I think this does shine a spotlight on the vicious nature of this type of attack, but also, you know, in relation to the comments, which are also very, very worrying and shocking that I've been seeing on social media relating to this.
Yeah, there seems to be an incredible amount of gloating. There's a voyeuristic approach, isn't there?
Yeah, and again, that's showing that other side of social media, that's shining that spotlight into it, and this is sort of undoing a lot of the work that we're trying to do with young people, starting to use social media, starting to explore the world of social media, and educate them around appropriate and responsible use of social media, and understanding that digital footprint and uploading content online, that, you know, even if that content is taken down from Facebook, et al., or some other social media platform, there is a chance that will appear somewhere else online. So people really need to understand the impact that this can have when it makes its way online. And also people coming across, particularly younger social media users, maybe seeing this content for the first time and maybe do not have the resilience to process that type of content or understand the what happened in that particular video.
People have been fighting for generations. People have been vicious towards each other for as long as I can remember, and you know, if we watch old video and old film and stories being told, yeah, and read books, they've done it forever. They've done it from the Stone Age. People being vicious towards each other. But I just wonder, is social media now, to some extent, and I've touched on this so often that I don't know which answer to decide on myself. is social media making it worse, or is social media actually in some way assisting us because it shows how evil we can actually be? If that hadn't have been filmed, it would have been spoken about. But because it was filmed and because other similar incidents are filmed, we are aware of how incredibly vicious and evil people can be towards each other. Is that a plus or a minus?
Well, I think that, you know, previous to social media's existence and the internet existence, I think this type of incident would have been recorded and would have been, you know, pushed out through mainstream media, for example, newspapers and TV and radio. We would have heard about this. What we wouldn't have seen is the barbaric nature of the attack. And I think we're now exposed to that online. We can see that online, and that can reach all sorts of people in all sorts of situations, right from the young social media user right to the older social media user. So people can see that content now relatively easy, and that's the problem with social media, I think. I think the education still, again, remains very, very important. Responsible use of social media, understanding that type of content should not be online. And I think that's a real, real problem that we see. And again, it's going back to that earlier point that even if that content is removed, people can record it, people can repost it, it can end up appearing elsewhere online. So, you know, from the point of view of the individual involved per se, they're going to be seeing that content again or potentially reliving that moment. So that has real hurt and distress and can also cause further hurt and distress for the individual involved in that. So, and harm as well. So I think we need to understand the scale of this sort of stuff, and I think that's another problem with it, because what one person finds acceptable and appropriate, other people may not find acceptable and appropriate. And a lot of the times, there's no classification on the content. You know, if I used to go into Extravision, for example, and rent a DVD, it was, you know, 18 plus. So you knew that the content in that video was going to be, you know, more of an adult-related content, and that's what you're going to be exposed to. The problem with the internet is we don't have that rating approach. You can freely upload a piece of content onto any platform online, and until it's taken down, it can be accessed and it can be viewed. And even then, when it's taken down, it can still appear somewhere else. So it's the scale of that that I find really, really worrying, particularly as a parent myself, that, you know, you can access that content and no amount of filtering is going to prevent that from happening, and it's not that difficult to come across these types of content. So what about those younger social media users that are seeing that for the first time? You know, what about the impact that has on them? And it's that whole aspect of this shows that other side of social media. There is no doubt that social media has been a force of good. We have seen so many great uses of it around the world for shining the spotlight on other things that have happened, you know, in relation to human rights issues and all this kind of stuff. However, we're back to this point in relation to the appropriateness of that particular type of content and people feeling that it's acceptable to upload that content online and comment on that particular type of content.
Yeah, it's one thing filming something. It's another thing posting it online. Of course, some people are filming and posting at exactly the same time. I just wonder, Wayne, Lord forbid this should happen in this part of the world ever again, but if a bomb was to explode in one of our towns or cities and people were lying injured and dead in the street, would society broadcast that immediately on Facebook? Would people film it and immediately broadcast it live onto the internet where everyone could see it? When the atrocities happened down the years here, there were such strict rules with regards to the BBC, UTV, Sky News. Those rules still exist if a tragedy happens. Would the ordinary Joes and Josephines in the street put it live to air? Are we that sick?
And here lies the problem. You know, those restrictions are very, very important, and I think those restrictions should be in place, and I think that's very, very important. We don't have those restrictions in social media. It's, you know, a free-for-all, the quickest person to get it online, the quickest person to get the most views, you know, all of this sharing, all of this reposting, all of this commenting. And again, I do believe that would happen if an example like you've just mentioned was to take place. I do believe, based on what I've seen online, that something like that would happen. And I think you would agree with that based on what you see online on a daily basis. People don't actually think before they post and they share online. You go back to the example of the BBC, you go back to the example of the media outlets, U105, and all of these media outlets, everything is fact-checked. Discussions are happened before content is pushed out online. The general public doesn't have that training, and that's the thing that we need to understand. And I think the education is very, very important for parents to have a discussion with their children about the types of content that's online, and if they themselves are creating content, or indeed any individual is creating content, that you stop and you think before you post and you share that online, because you've posted it out there. It's kind of out there, and you know it's out there for people to view, people to share, people to save, people to comment on, and it's very difficult to take that back. That's the problem that we now have with the platforms and the tools that we have.
Wayne, thank you very much indeed. Wayne Danner from waynedanner.com. Going to speak to some more people in just a moment, including a guy who specialises in self-defence. Do we need our young people to be able to defend themselves, considering some of whom they might encounter out and about, the most vicious of vicious individuals? I see a texter saying, Wayne Danner speaks so much sense. He's a great guest to have on the programme. He certainly knows what he's about. He'd be a great man for every school, every group, every society, every family to interact with, to try and save our children from themselves, or try and save maybe adults from themselves as well. But the guinea pig generation of Facebook Living and Periscoping and being on there broadcasting, it's like driving without a license. That's what it is. That's exactly what it's like. You know, to broadcast, you've got to learn to broadcast. You've got to be corralled. You've got to have rules. You've got to have guidance. You've got to have edit. You've got to have an editor. You've got to have someone who's a second brain thinking, listen, that won't work, or you can't do that. But everyone's broadcasting now. Everyone's broadcasting, and those screens are sinister places because of it. How sinister are the streets generally? I want to speak to Jim McCausland, who's a self-defence expert. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Jim, I'd like to think if I was attacked in the street, like what we're seeing on videos generally, that I'd be able to handle myself. I don't know if I could. Should our children be getting self-defense lessons? Should they be made aware of how to protect themselves from vicious attack?
Well, I don't think there's any disadvantage in teaching young people some self-defense skills, Frank. Tend to look at it a bit more like an airbag in your car or a fire extinguisher in your house. You know, most people will never ever need it, but certainly there's no disadvantage in having some skills and doing something.
How do you go about getting the skills? I've got a friend, I'll not name her, but she worked with me for a while. She's now off working in another field. But I was so full of admiration for her abilities to carry out a very quick routine, because she was black belt in whatever she was a black belt in. You know, she was very skilled in a number of those martial arts. But to me, she just looked like a placid, polite, sophisticated young woman. And when I had the conversation with her about the skills that she had, she did a couple of little mini demonstrations about how easily she could disable me and other people who were in the room. And it was such a talent to have. Just with a couple of steps, she put you completely in a position where you couldn't have done anything against her. I would have loved to have had those skills. Are they difficult to acquire?
I think anyone can learn the basics, good basic self-defense skills, in sort of 2, 3, maybe 4 lessons. You'd certainly be better in a position to defend yourself knowing something rather than knowing nothing. But I think in real terms, instead of sort of traditional martial arts, people could probably do well if they wanted to have their young people or themselves trained up to try and find a specific self-defense class where you can learn simple and effective skills pretty quickly.
And you run these, you know, how many people would come along? What age groups come along?
Normally we train people sort of 15 years and over, Frank. There's classes. We run 6 or 7 different classes throughout Belfast. And at any one time, you'd have a number of people in private training as well. So it's kind of more on people's mind recently. You know, I think if you go on holiday somewhere and you speak to Americans or whatever, virtually everybody you speak to has done a self-defense program, as they call it, in America. I think there's maybe a wee bit more of a culture of just sort of protecting yourself from the what-if scenarios. But we do find more and more now that some of the people that are coming to us have actually been the victims of assault or the victims of a vicious bullying attack in school, etc., etc. It's good for the confidence. But I don't think the whole world's out to get you, but certainly there's no disadvantage of being able to look after yourself a wee bit better with some basic training.
And do you find that when people do come along and they get the basic training, they have a greater understanding of how to be disciplined themselves? They're not going to get into a fight. They're not actually going to attack someone.
Oh, of course not. I mean, the first thing we teach everybody is to run, and then after that, obviously, they apologize and plead, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is, with self-defense training, you also build much more of an awareness of the likelihood of situations that might crop up where you could be vulnerable to a threat or to an assault. So the physical skills are one aspect of it, but also there is that awareness that goes along with the training as well, about where not to go and about young people maybe sticking together. And if they're going out in groups, we'll talk about things like having a rally point where people always go to if one person is missing for a minute or two. So there's a bit more to self-defense training than the actual skills of stopping punches and kicks or escaping from grabs or whatever.
And do you also give witness whenever it comes to use of force in courts? Do you get involved in that sphere?
Yes, I'm on the Register of Independent Experts to the court, so I have acted on behalf of major organisations also and individuals. And a lot of that is down to, if somebody has been assaulted as a result of their work, have they been efficiently trained to deal with the threat that they're facing, or if they've had to use force, has the force been appropriate to the time? So, yeah, I think whenever you work at what I work at, you do tend to hear much more of the nasty stories. So while this was a horrific thing on social media with the young lady in Bangor, it isn't new to me, because quite a lot of the people, as I say, that come along to the classes have got a story to tell about what has happened to them or what has happened to one of their loved ones.
Yeah, I see a couple of people asking, what are your classes called? Just very briefly, Jim, what's it called?
Well, Self Defence North is the name of the company, and if you go onto Facebook or social media or there, you'll find Self Defence North, and details of our classes are on that.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Jim McCausland, thank you, Jim. Michael has a point to make, and this is about initiatives and bullying and anti-bullying campaigns. Michael's in the North Down area. Michael, obviously going by the videos that we've been seeing over the weekend, an anti-bullying campaign in North Down would sound like a good thing to be highlighting this morning.
Absolutely, Frank. Good morning. Absolutely. I'm a community representative within the North Down area, and after watching the video last night is horrific, to say the least. So I took it upon myself and a number of other individuals to run an anti-bullying campaign and to highlight the issues surrounding bullying. So we, fortunately, we're dealing with Origin North Down Borough Council to secure a date, but our plan is to hold an event, an all-day an event. Local companies like Bouncer-Roos in Newton Ards have very kindly donated a lot of bouncy castles. We will have information stands. I have to meet with the PCSP and the police later on today to see, because within some of the comments last night, the police are sort of giving a hard time, Frank, but people need to understand that there is a due process and we should leave things like this to the professionals. And what we mustn't forget about is that there's a victim here. So take away sort of the physical injuries and the mental health aspect of this young lady, you know, that needs to be sort of closely monitored. So we'll be linking in with a lot of local charities around the North Down area. We have within North Down, especially being a Newton Ard supporter, we have a very famous forward, Ross Clark, used to play, well, plays for Linfield. Ross has very kindly said that he will attend himself in anything that we need. He is more than happy to come on board. But getting back to the issue around bullying, I think more education within our school system, more education within our youth, and I'm a great believer in rehabilitation. I think it's a cornerstone of society, rehabilitation. It doesn't take away from the vile act that happened. You know, that's horrendous. I'm not condoning that whatsoever. They should feel the more harsh end of the legal system, and I hope that.
Yeah, I don't want to go into too much to the actual case. This is important, Michael, but just let's stick to the bullying side.
Yeah. But getting back to the point with the bullying, we hope to engage with the local community and give them as much information and hopefully let them engage with local charitable organisations as well as statutory agencies to let people know that there is help out there. And if it helps one person, Frank, if one person comes forward and said, "Yep, I've been bullied," you know, that it all makes it worthwhile. And God forbid, maybe someone could be standing there or come along, and they could maybe be part of a bullying circle or bullying themselves, and it might make them realise just how severe bullying can be.
It is. It is an initiative that's worth giving consideration to, Michael. I know a lot of people will be saying this is right at the top end of bullying, the vicious attack that they've seen on social media, and there are many other examples as well on those video platforms. But we cannot ignore that ongoing education for young people is vital. It is absolutely essential. And it's harrowing to think what some youngsters are going through and what others are involved in. This is the Frank Mitchell phone-in. Good morning to you. 02890-333-105. We've lots of other things to cover on the show as well this morning. We'll be hearing from you as the morning progresses.